Coming up on Fronteras, after Arizona's immigration enforcement law strained the state's relations with Mexico, things seem to be getting friendlier now.
You know, we can't continue down the path of being afraid. We need to embrace, and we've taken a couple of trips into Mexico and talked to our counterparts, and I think that we realize that there is a great economy there.
How some Arizona mayors are working to redefine Arizona-Mexico relations. In a rural New Mexico town, locals talk about their favorite bar with a certain nostalgia.
Some of the cowboys would be there at 10 o'clock. Some of them would have their horses out in front.
The bar closed more than a decade ago, and now it's gotten too expensive to reopen. Monica Ortiz Uribe reports on the high cost of liquor licenses in New Mexico. But first, the news. This is Fronteras, a journalism project that covers the U.S.-Mexico border region, immigration, and the rising Latino demographic. Fronteras was created via an unprecedented multimedia collaboration among seven public radio stations. I'm Crystal Chavez. There are signs that relations between the state of Arizona and Mexico are on the mend. That's after Arizona's immigration enforcement law provoked deep tensions a few years ago. From the Fronteras desk in Phoenix, Jude Joffe Block reports local leaders are making an effort to boost trade and tourism.
Here at Phoenix Sky Harbor Airport, more than 100 jets take off every week bound for Mexico. But that wasn't enough, so the city courted the Mexican airline Volaris to offer new flights, including a nonstop to Mexico City that begins in December.
In recent years, demand to and from Phoenix and Mexico has been growing.
Deborah Ostreicher is the airport's deputy aviation director, and she says the new flights are part of a conscious effort by the city to create more links with Mexico.
Because it really is our largest trading partner, it's very important to us, and we want to offer more air service so that people can come and go to and from Mexico.
Not too long ago, Arizona was internationally known for its efforts to crack down on illegal immigration from Mexico. Now, local mayors are seeing legal Mexican visitors as key to economic development. Marie Lopez Rogers is the mayor of the Phoenix suburb of Avondale. She says 1 year just before the recession, 24 million Mexicans visited the state.
They spent $2.7 billion.
Lopez Rogers wants to see that number grow. She's working with local leaders on a proposal that would allow Mexicans who have border crossing cards to visit the entire state instead of just the zone 75 miles north of the border they can visit now. It reflects a change in the mood from just a few years ago.
And I think the mayors have realized that, you know, we can't continue down the path of being afraid. We need to embrace. And we've taken a couple of trips into Mexico and talked to our counterparts. And I think that we realize that there is a great economy there.
The recession made clear to many leaders that Arizona needed to diversify its economy away from just real estate, says Eric Lee. He directs the North American Research Partnership, a think tank focused on the continent.
At the end of the day, you have to make and sell stuff to folks to grow your wealth, to grow your economy. Mexico is right there as our go-to customer internationally.
But relations between Arizona and Mexico grew downright chilly in 2010 when Arizona passed its immigration enforcement law, SB 1070. Now, Lee says, it's notable who is pushing to repair the relationship and boost trade.
In the wake of SB 1070, local leaders around the state have really taken a leadership role, which was historically the prerogative of the state of Arizona.
For example, the Phoenix City Council has just approved opening a trade office in Mexico City early next year. It will be the only permanent presence Arizona has in Mexico's capital. The City Council is also working on a number of projects with the Mexican consulate. They include a cultural center in Phoenix that will showcase Mexican and Mexican-American exhibitions. Roberto Rodriguez Hernandez is Mexico's newly appointed consul general.
This cultural center is going to be not just a message, but a symbol of unity, a symbol for a new beginning, a symbol of new opportunities.
Now that tensions are thawing, the hard work of boosting cross-border trade can begin. In recent years, each of the other border states have enjoyed substantial gains in their exports to Mexico. What remains to be seen is if Arizona can catch up. In Phoenix, I'm Jude Joffe Block.
Mexican President Enrique Peña Nieto recently spent the day in a border town so small no Mexican president had ever gone there. Peña Nieto unveiled an economic stimulus for the border region. That story from Fronteras reporter Lorne Madelon.
Bravo, Peña!
Peña Nieto has already made history. He wants foreign investment in the state-owned oil industry, an unthinkable act in the eyes of Mexican nationalists. He arrested the corrupt but politically powerful head of the teachers' union. He's attacking monopolies, and now he becomes the first president to come to Ojinaga.
De aquí de Ojinaga, de sus habitantes, que me han recibido de manera cálida.
Together in relative isolation, yet strategically located for trade, both Ojinaga and Presidio consider themselves an extension of the other. Peña Nieto announced an economic stimulus program that includes controversial higher taxes for border businesses that would then go into social spending, and simultaneously he sent messages to two audiences. He signaled to Washington that he's serious about expanding border trade, and in contrast to his predecessor's drug war narrative, Peña Nieto focused on economic reform.
Para volver a México más competitivo, para atraer más inversiones y generar más empleo.
He said he wants a more competitive Mexico that will attract investment and create jobs. Peña Nieto said the border's been neglected to the detriment of his country and the U.S. He said a major series of internal checkpoints that drag down border commerce are about to be closed. He believes the move will foster easier transport of products inside Mexico and allow Mexicans crossing in both directions to save time.
A toda la zona fronteriza, no solo de Chihuahua, sino de todo el país.
Americans here say that a heavy-handed border policy designed far away in Washington, D.C., has crippled an interdependent border economy. Chihuahua rancher Alberto Atolini says borderland Mexicans know a similar feeling when it comes to their government.
We are so far from Mexico City, and they don't know what happened in the north, in Chihuahua and the other state. We are so far.
The U.S. delegation was led by Carlos Nieto. He's the son of a prominent political family that's active in both cities.
Very old, forgotten border community. I'm hoping that our American counterparts will follow their lead as trade begins to open through this border point where there are jobs, there is less a probability of violence, and there's hope for the people on both sides.
Presidio Economic Development Director Brad Newton.
However goes Ojinaga, so goes Presidio, because we build together.
Peña Nieto's visit to a place many Mexicans have never heard of may be a premonition of good things to come. There are bilateral plans under discussion to build a rail terminal that would link Sinaloa with Texas and to expand the international bridge. Two plans that now seem just a little bit closer following an unprecedented presidential visit. I'm Lorne Madelon in Ojinaga, Chihuahua.
The wine region of Baja California has put itself on the map in recent years as a producer of quality artisanal wines and as a tourist destination for wine lovers and foodies. But Jill Replegal from our Fronteras desk reports that local vintners are furious about a recent rule change that they say threatens the region's future.
This year's Grape Harvest Festival in Valle de Guadalupe attracted 60,000 visitors to the rural valley just north of Ensenada. But local winemakers have threatened to cancel next year's festival. They're protesting new land use regulations that they say could turn the valley into a concrete-filled suburb. Ensenada City Council approved the regulations in November. They allow for apartments and townhouse developments in areas currently slated for agriculture. Besides potentially ruining the valley's country charm, winemakers say there's not enough water to sustain urban development and vineyards. Ensenada's mayor, Enrique Pelayo Torres, didn't respond to an interview request, but in a statement, he called the winemakers elitist and said the new regulations would allow more people to join in the valley's business opportunities. Victor Manuel Torres Alegre runs a winery in the valley. He says, what we want is a development plan that keeps the agricultural part of the valley agricultural. Housing and tourism development are welcome in the parts of the valley designated for those uses. It's now looking like the winemakers might get their way. The new governor of Baja California has said he'll block the new regulations. In San Diego, I'm Jill Replogle.
There's still more Fronteras coming up. In a rural New Mexico town, locals talk about their favorite bar with a certain nostalgia.
Some of the cowboys would be there at 10 o'clock. Some of them would have their horses out in front.
The bar closed more than a decade ago, and now it's gotten too expensive to reopen. A report on the high cost of liquor licenses in New Mexico. Stay tuned. This is Fronteras. I'm Crystal Chavez. The Arizona State Forestry Division was fined nearly $560,000 in violations for the way the division handled the Yarnell Hill fire. As you may recall, 19 Arizona firefighters were killed this summer when they were trapped in a wildfire. The Industrial Commission of Arizona approved the fines at a hearing Wednesday. From Phoenix, Al Macias reports.
The Industrial Commission voted to fine the State Forestry Division for three violations. Two of the citations were for workplace safety violations. The third was for what investigators say was a willful, serious violation. Safety Compliance Supervisor Marshall Krotenberg says the investigation found the State Forestry Division had knowingly put their employees in danger.
And that the employer implemented suppression strategies that prioritized protection of non-defensible structures and pasture land over firefighter safety.
Krotenberg says the tragedy boils down to planning and communications failures. No maps were provided, plans to deal with an impending thunderstorm were not made, and safety officers were several hours late to the scene. Krotenberg says the Division of Occupational Safety and Health believes the breakdowns in planning and communication were contributing factors in the deaths of the 19 hotshots.
I believe as a result of those folks not being present in this partial team, it increased the risk of firefighter exposure to hazards associated with inadequate planning. We were unable to determine why that occurred. Apparently, it got dropped. The ball got dropped.
The wife of one of the hotshots, Julia Ann Ashcraft, says she suspected communication and planning failures, and she is relieved to have some answers.
I'm not trying to point a finger at any one person in incident command. I just know that the problem came from complete lack of organization and communication from the people that should have been in control of the fire.
Ashcraft says this report is a step in the right direction. She says the fines have to be big enough to make sure this situation is not repeated. In Phoenix, I'm Al Macias.
Since the end of Prohibition, states have grappled with how to regulate the sale of alcohol. Some retain laws that haven't changed much in the last 80 years. Take New Mexico. It has some of the most expensive liquor licenses in the country. The state's last liquor store license sold for nearly $1 million. Monica Ortiz Uribe takes a look at how these antiquated laws impact the state's economy.
Owning a liquor license in New Mexico is like sitting on a gold mine. The demand is high and the supply is low. New Mexico is one of about 25 states that operates under a quota system, meaning the number of liquor licenses is limited.
The more people that want it, the more valuable it is, the harder it is to get.
Marcy Dickerson is the lucky owner of four licenses in Las Cruces, New Mexico's second largest city. Lucky because scoring a full-service license that includes distilled spirits is like closing on your dream home. People hire so-called liquor brokers who hunt for available licenses like hungry real estate agents.
The state is not creating any more licenses. You have to purchase those licenses from someone else who has them.
Dickerson is a homegrown entrepreneur, owner of the largest catering company in southern New Mexico. She carries herself like a woman in charge, atop a pair of black heels. She's currently on a waiting list to buy a fifth license, which could cost at least $400,000. For that price, Dickerson says she could open three restaurants in neighboring Texas, about 45 miles away.
It makes it much, much harder to open one of these facilities and create new jobs and create a new tax base.
New Mexico is among the poorest states in the nation and is highly dependent on government jobs. The current governor has been pushing to make the state more business-friendly. In December, a new state-appointed task force will start brainstorming a complete overhaul to the current liquor laws. But change won't be easy. Current license owners don't want their investment to lose value, but that leaves others in a difficult position.
My name is Gilbert Gomez. We're at the Brown Derby nightclub in Santa Clara, New Mexico.
Gilbert Gomez bought the Brown Derby 24 years ago. It's the last bar standing in his hometown. It's also the place Gomez got his first job out of high school. But now, Gomez is 69 years old. He wants to sell the bar and retire, but the law won't allow it.
Being the last remaining license, we cannot sell the license outside the municipality.
In a town of less than 2,000 people, selling a bar that's tied to an asset worth hundreds of thousands of dollars is unlikely. The price of a liquor license in tiny Santa Clara is about what you'd pay in San Francisco, California. In rural New Mexico, the cost of a license practically makes opening a full-service bar a philanthropic endeavor. On a Sunday afternoon, a group of locals in Hillsboro, New Mexico, crack open a beer on the porch of an antique shop. Only about 80 people live here full-time. A decade ago, their local bar, the S Bar X, shut down. Sue Basin remembers it fondly.
Some of the cowboys would be there at 10 o'clock. Some of them would have their horses out in front. In those days, it was like a family bar.
Locals describe the S Bar X as the community living room. Children would play under the pool table. There were pumpkin carvings at Halloween and luminarias at Christmas. When the bar closed, the local economy took a hit, and the population in Hillsboro dropped nearly 25%.
Basically, no young people that have moved into this town to really keep it going.
Now, the adopted home of some Hillsboro residents is a lonesome dive 30 miles away off a two-lane highway.
Hey, hey, hey!
Some Sundays, musicians gather here and play. Mary Wilton is the postmaster from Hillsboro. She says she misses the S Bar X.
Well, it wasn't so much the bar. It was just everybody having a place to be together. Whether you drank or not, you went there.
And under current law, there's little hope that small communities like Hillsboro will ever get their neighborhood bar back. Reporting from southern New Mexico, I'm Monica Ortiz Uribe.
Over a year ago, the federal government banned USDA inspectors from entering Mexico at five Texas border crossings to inspect cattle headed to the U.S. That decision has had a huge economic impact on small border towns in Texas, and now cattle producers and border politicians are asking for relief. Frontera's reporter Lorne Madelon of Marfa Public Radio has the story.
Cows imported from the beef-rich state of Chihuahua bellow while being separated for shipping. We're at a temporary station set up in Presidio, Texas, where the animals are now inspected by USDA agents. Until last year, the USDA routinely sent inspectors across the border to a state-of-the-art building on the other side of the Rio Grande in Ojinaga, Mexico. There, as the major import point for Mexican cattle, 2,500 head were checked every weekday and sent on to the U.S. But politicians from Texas and other states have raised concerns over border violence. The Texas Agriculture Commission even waded into the issue. An agency website claims that Texas is, quote, ground zero for Mexican cartels, portraying the 1,200-mile border that Texas shares with Mexico as a war zone. Agriculture Commissioner Todd Staples.
And until the Mexican government can control the violence and guarantee the safety of our federal employees, I have to agree that we should not send them in harm's way across the border.
But the ban has had real economic consequences here. Cattle broker Salvador Baeza at the Presidio Stockyard says the economic fallout in Presidio totals $5 million and counting.
Presidio is losing a lot of money that's supposed to stay in town. The stores are losing money. Everybody's losing money.
Here's why. The inspection pen on the Texas side of the Rio Grande is a makeshift affair that can't handle more than 700 head per week. That's a far cry from the 2,500 every day before the USDA decision. So Mexican producers, among the largest exporters of cattle to the United States, providing 25% of all the beef imports in this country, are now trucking their cattle to a USDA inspection site across the border in New Mexico, a rough journey of 4 hours. Alberto Atolini of the Chihuahua Cattle Producers Association in Ojinaga says the crossing at Presidio Ojinaga had worked well for 90 years before the USDA pullout.
The person from, not just from Chihuahua, for an 11 states from Mexico come to here.
Atolini says the makeshift Texas inspection site is too small to make the trip worthwhile. He doesn't understand the security concerns. He says Ojinaga is relatively tranquil, and the statistics, 5 murders so far this year, support that claim. Moreover, the 4-hour journey to Santa Teresa stresses the animals to the point they lose weight and value on the trip.
They lose a lot of weight. They say it around 5 to 7%, and that's the reason that we lost a lot of money to be the inspect here in the United States.
The USDA says the agency hopes eventually to return to Ojinaga and other shuttered Mexican stations. But meanwhile, the inspection ban will likely have economic consequences that stretch far beyond this remote border region. Jim Dunn's an economist at Penn State University's College of Agricultural Sciences. He says if you like fast food, you may soon be paying more for your hamburger should the ban continue.
We buy a lot of cattle from other countries, and Mexico has historically been the most important source of those international cattle. And a lot of that cattle comes in the United States and becomes hamburger. So it's a big balance of our livestock industry. We sell them high-quality meat for steaks at the fancy resorts, and we buy a lot of hamburger from them.
Cattle producers say that traditional arrangement has been crippled by the ban. Desperate to get that ban lifted, producers from Mexico and Texas will meet next week to craft their own security plan that they hope will convince Washington that cross-border inspections are safe. I'm Lorne Madelon in Presidio, Texas.
You've been listening to Fronteras, a journalism project that covers the U.S.-Mexico border region, immigration, and the rising Latino demographic. Fronteras is a collaboration of public radio stations KNAU Flagstaff, KRWG Las Cruces, KNPR Las Vegas, KJZZ Phoenix, KPBS San Diego, KUAZ Tucson, KXWT West Texas Public Radio, KRTS Marfa, and KSTX San Antonio. We're online at fronterasdesk.org. Our theme music was composed by Charanga Cakewalk. I'm Texas Public Radio's Crystal Chavez. Thanks for listening.